got the job on the technicality of a legend who recommended you. You are nothing, you are a fool, and you are a waste of time. Good night.
I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that.
I don't believe Pep Linsdorf's healthy.
Now, Jack Charlton is quite right to be indignant about that, and the gentleman in the yellow hat really exists nowhere in the firmament of international football.
The 10-man board of the FAI, the clowns, are now going to put the names in a hat. They're going to pick people who they've read about in newspapers.
Give it a blam and flash it into the net. What a goal that was.
And of course, Celtic.
I agree with you.
Ronnie just wants to say the word Schweinsteiger.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.
Welcome along to the Balls.ie Football Show. We're back for our third ever episode. You must know who we are at this stage, but if you don't, my name is Mark Farley and I am joined by Gary Connaughton and Sean Meehan is back this week. The two lads have been taking in everything there is to know about Irish soccer over the past 7 days. Lads, Gary, you were at the Ireland-Switzerland game on Thursday. Sean, you were at Ireland against Armenia in the Under-21s on Friday. Did you enjoy the matches?
I did, in the end. There was periods I didn't enjoy, but we'll get into that soon, I'd imagine.
Sean.
I enjoyed all of it. It's great when Ireland are like
going to win. Just, this is the future World Cup winning team.
Exactly. It's great to witness that up close and personal.
Exactly. Well, this week's show we'll be reflecting on both those matches. We'll also be getting Kevin Doyle's opinion on the Ireland Switzerland game and some other chat besides that general soccer chat as well with him. We'll also be hearing from Gary Neville. We spoke to him last Wednesday. We'll be playing Morris Brosnan's interview with him on the show later on. And we'll be playing a very special quiz this week. Like every other week, we have a themed football quiz. I'll be putting Gary and Sean against each other again. But this week's theme, right, is footballers whose surnames are actually first names.
They're the most evil of all people.
For instance, Gary Neville. Neville could be a first name.
As so, his father's name is.
Exactly, Neville. So that's what this week's quiz is going to be. And I promise you, it's a doozy. It's going to be great.
I'm excited for that.
But first of all, let's jump into Ireland against Switzerland. Gary, you were at it.
I was.
What was your opinion? You were. I was reading your player ratings. You were a bit harsh, I thought, at times. I give you just my background on this game. I was away for the first 60 minutes of it, but I was kind of following it on Twitter. And it seemed like every other Ireland game, I was like, this is going to be a miracle if we get out of here with a draw. Came home, Switzerland immediately scored. But then the last 15 minutes was brilliant. It was like the Jack Charlton days. We were getting it up, we were just getting about them, and it was like, geez, Glenn Whelan rattling the crossbar from off screen. That's the only way you can describe that. How far out was he? He was off screen right before the ball came to him.
Yeah, like it was, like you said, the last 15 minutes was really exciting and the stadium was bouncing and it was great to see, but it's kind of overshadowed the 75 plus minutes that preceded that, and it's kind of masked some of the questionable performances that were put in as well. Like, we got a lot of grief for some of the I personally got a lot of grief for some of the player
and rightly so.
Well, yeah, but there is, you kind of, when it happens like that where the last 10 minutes tells a certain story, people kind of tend to forget the 80 minutes that came before it. But it was a good result for Ireland in the end, obviously.
Like, I just like to say, please keep Enda Stevens out of your mouth. That's a dream of legend right there. And so what if he nearly decapitated somebody?
Mbabu.
Kevin Mbabu.
What rating did you give Stevens?
6. Because I actually didn't think Stevens was that... Well, he was terrible in the first 20 minutes, I thought he was reasonably solid after that.
I don't know what it was. It was almost like, you can see how confident he was, like, playing for Sheffield United in the Premier League. And then, as he was trying to get into the game, everything he did just went against him. Like, I mean, if he had tried to kick Mbabu in the head, he would have missed. Like, that's how I feel about that tackle. He wasn't helped by, you know, playing behind James McLean.
Yeah.
Who, I would have said you were overtly harsh. No, I agreed with your rating, which was a 4.
It was a 4, which was the
I agreed with your rating on James McLean that he was a 4. Up until about the 80th minute mark.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mark, when you saw him, you were probably like, McLean's playing very well.
McLean was the best player on the pitch. Obviously, I watched back bits afterwards. I could see where he came from. But at the same point, I thought, you know, he turned that game for Ireland. If it wasn't for him, like, he won a brilliant ball down in the corner, or made a great tackle in the corner to prevent a possible Switzerland goal. Then, obviously, from the wheel and hitting the crossbar, McLean was the one who won the ball back. I know the cross was heavily deflected, but, like, that ball was... There was no, you know, that was one you shouldn't have won back in the first place to be able to get that cross in. So I don't know. I mean, like, you have to add extra weight to that than the 70. Obviously, you know, you can't say, right, well, this player was brilliant for 10 minutes, let's give him a 9 out of 10. But you definitely have to give him a little bit more a little bit more credit than
we don't mean to attack you, Gary.
Possibly, like I don't want to come on here. I feel like every week I'm coming on here and I'm being cornered into bashing James McLean.
Negative Nancy.
But that's not what I'm trying to do. But like you said, he was really good in that last 10 minutes. But what he was really good with was the energy he brought, which obviously is valuable in itself. But he still didn't do anything of attacking note in the game apart from that cross, which was heavily deflected. Like, he won the ball back, fair enough, but there was no bit of attack and ingenuity in his play at all. Like, he fell over the ball 4 or 5 times in the game trying to dribble past lads. James McLean, when he gets on the ball, and in the last 10 minutes it worked really well when we're chasing a game and everything is great, but he has tunnel vision. As when he gets the ball, he gets it in his head, I'm going to beat this man and I'm going to get it into the box. And then De Stevens is kind of standing there at times, coming down the left wing, being like, hello, like, I'm maybe the form left back in the Premier League at the minute, and I've just been completely ignored here. He's like, when, like, De Stevens, like we said, was a bit dodgy in the first 10, 15 minutes, but he wasn't given the opportunity to shine either, because James McLean was getting on the ball and just trying to do everything himself when he definitely doesn't need to or should not be doing it.
Yeah, when I was watching it on RTE, and obviously Beglin is a great man for a quote. Now, one that I can particularly remember that wasn't exact. Well, it was funny to me was that in the second half, McLean got the ball, and rather than look back, play Stevens, and he could have like seen the pitch from a much wider angle. Beglin just goes, McLean's have to just cross him blindly there, and that quote is just almost like the perfect description of when James McLean gets the ball. He thinks he knows exactly what he needs to do with it, when instead he has no. You know, he has no kind of vision outside of what he plans on doing with the ball. And it worked great in the last 10 minutes, but for the rest of the match, it was just kind of a, what are you doing, James?
Yeah, I'll tell you who impressed me when he came on was Alan Judge. Like, Judge, obviously, I think he had a Premier League move pretty much secured before he broke his leg a couple of seasons ago. And you would have thought, well, that was just before he went to the Euros. That ruled him out of the Euros. You would have thought that's his international career probably finished, like, and it hadn't really even begun properly. Obviously, Mick seems to be a fan of him and would have managed against him in the championship and would have known him well. And he proved his worth on Thursday night.
Yeah, but he's a League One player now as well. He's playing for Ipswich in League One, so it must be the fact that McCarthy sees the value in him, and it's sort of evidenced by that header that he nipped in to save a certain goal.
Yeah, that was really impressive. To be fair to Judge, I think we can all appreciate that he's too good for League One. And from what I've heard, he seems to be standing out an absolute mile on those games. So I wouldn't see him lasting there too long. But yeah, like, he seems to have moved ahead of Callum O'Dowda in the pecking order, who hasn't been playing at Bristol really all that much. So to be fair, Judge was impressive when he came on, and Mick was definitely cheering him on the sideline. He was there, he was kind of getting into it, but he did make a difference, to be fair, yeah.
It's great to see, yeah, that Ipswich move was probably one where he wanted to get first team football to prove his fitness and to get back into the rhythm of things, and then it was just, it was a bad time to be joining Ipswich Town.
It was a bit of a strange one, because he was only there on loan, and then he signed a permanent deal with about 4 or 5 games to go in the season when it was kind of obvious that they were going down. So I would have thought he would have waited till the summer and seen what other moves might have been out there. But obviously he was enjoying his football, and, you know, maybe that's the most important thing, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Also, Scott Hogan, which we forget about, poor Scott. I was very impressed when he came on. I felt as though he kind of... Listen, he's not going to be a first-choice striker, especially with McGoldrick performing in the Premier League, but he sort of took the ball in, he was constantly available, was running into channels, was most definitely offside for our goal, and it should have been disallowed.
Say that.
But I was actually quite impressed with Scott Hogan. I thought it was his best 10 minutes in an Ireland shirt.
Also, the fact that is it just Scott Hogan or having two people up front?
Well, we played 4-4-2 against Gibraltar in the home game, and Hogan started with McGoldrick. And to be fair to him, it was kind of mixed, because he was moving really well and he got himself into good positions, but his touch and his finishing just was terrible when he got there. So I don't know about Scott Hogan. Like, I think that backup striker spot is, unless we play two, but I don't think we will, unless we're forced to, like we were the other night. But I think that backup striker spot is very much up for grabs in for Ireland at the minute. You have David McGoldrick, who's playing really, really well. He's obviously a mile ahead of everyone. But then you have Sean Maguire, Scott Hogan, James Collins is banging them in for Luton. Yeah. Shane Long isn't even in the squad. You have Michael Obafemi potentially there. Aaron Connolly now at Brighton. We're going to talk more about them later.
So you listed a load of strikers there, Gary, and none of them will play and come next June for Ireland because we've got about 15 and the other 21s that are going to steal the show. Who else caught your eye, though, from that Ireland team on Thursday?
Jeff Hendrick was impressive when he was on the ball. I thought he's kind of...
I was just going to say there's a direct correlation, I think, between the length of Jeff Hendrick's hair and how good he is in an Ireland shirt. When Jeff Hendrick had the full sort of, what would you describe it?
When he first came into the Ireland squad and he was solidifying his place, he had that weird, like, it was a comb over, but it went long. It wasn't like slick back, you know.
It's like he has a thicker head of hair than David Beckham, but it's like Beckham's hair in the not 99 but not as long nearly.
And it also, instead of going like kind of a bit over his forehead, it's slicked back a bit.
It's not like
the boy band Beckham.
No,
it's a little bit more thicker.
It's like if a lad from the country tried to grow Beckham's hair and is like, you know what, this is just too thick, it needs, you know, Beckham's hair was long and light.
It was very light, yeah, no, in fairness.
I don't know where I go with this, but yeah. Basically, when Jeff Hendrick's hair gets long enough to necessitate a hairband, he's going to be in top form for Ireland.
Yeah, Jeff Hendrick, when he plays well for Ireland, it brings up the whole level of performance for the whole team, I think. But when he plays bad for Ireland, he's a disaster.
For instance, for the Switzerland goal.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, we kind of seen bits of it, both sides of that coin in this one game, because he was really good when he got on the ball near the Swiss box, and that's what we've actually wanted to see him doing, because there was times at O'Neill where he played deep and he was forced to like pick up the ball from the defender and try to get the play going, which he isn't good at, and he was a disaster at times. But now Mick is moving him a bit up the pitch. He had that lovely touch where he'd done a Swiss defender, played through James McLean, who subsequently had a bad touch and nearly fell over the ball.
Right foot.
Yeah, right foot. But then there was also, like you said, when we don't have the ball, he looks a bit lost at times. He doesn't really know where he's meant to be. That goal, the Swiss goal, was almost entirely his fault, where he completely fell asleep and didn't see Shar running, which was like a basic 5 yard straight run, and he sold the defence down the river, and that cost us the goal. But so if he could kind of improve off the ball, I think he could definitely, and stay with the way the current trajectory is on going forward, I think he could be really, really important for Ireland in the next few games.
Yeah, he's definitely got enough. Like, you know, with Jeff Hendrick, like, even 2016 was the perfect encapsulation of how good he can be for Ireland. And it's terrible to see a centre mid that just sometimes loses his way at the very vital moments. Like, you need, as a centre mid, especially to play that role, like, Jeff Hendrick's not a number 10, but he's not a number 6. He is a number 8. That's right, I'm going squad number based here.
He's an 8.5 even. I don't know if he's quite a number 8.
No, he's not a number 8 because he's not particularly box to box.
Yeah.
But he needs to have enough wherewithal to at least track a runner. Like, especially Fabian Schär's like 6'4". You can't miss him.
And he's a defender.
He's a centre half. But absolutely, like, I think overlooked in all of this is how good a finish that was from a centre half. He shouldn't have been in that position, but great finish.
You wouldn't see an Irish striker finishing like that.
Yeah, jeez.
That finish, and obviously then you've got the Didsy.
I remember the first time I heard that was when I did the interview with Enda Stevens, and we were talking about Irish lads at Sheffield United, and he was like, Didsy, and I was like, I've never heard him called Didsy before, but now you only hear him called Didsy. Yeah.
So Didsy bags the equaliser, which, for those of you who are listening, we're going to chat to Kevin Doyle in a second. We were speaking to him at the launch of our partnership between us and Ladbrokes over the coming months. He's a Ladbrokes ambassador, of course. We're going to be chatting to him about the game, but ahead of that, on our podcast on Wednesday, the build-up podcast that we do in association with Ladbrokes, myself, yourself, Sean, and Mick McCarthy were chatting about the Ireland-Switzerland game. We were previewing it, and our prediction was, guess what? Guess what we predicted, Gary?
I didn't hear it, but I'm going to guess, right, based on Ireland's history, and a 1-1 draw on David McGoldrick to score.
No, just a 1-1 draw. We're not that good. Now, we did have two predictions. We had a 1-1 draw, and Shane Duffy to score the last goal. So that last free kick, I was sitting there going, this is unbelievable. This is win-win for us. Either Nothing comes of it. Like, whatever reason, everyone just decided that this was going on Shane Duffy's head. The camera went to Shane Duffy going up in the car. Yeah. On commentary, they're all just talking about Shane Duffy. And this is the last chance of Shane Duffy. The ball goes in on Shane Duffy and he gives a free out.
I was like just silently raging. If they played such a high line for that, Seamus Coleman was free on the right. And even if they had dragged, say, an Akanji or whoever was playing on the left for them, Ricardo Rodriguez, out to Coleman, I fancy Coleman to at least give him a shimmy, get down the line and whip a ball in. I was like, what are you doing playing the... Like, I know it's like last minute free kick on the bunts of Shane Duffy. But... just have a tiny, like in that moment, somebody
a
just
little bit
to,
of what would John Giles say in the pundit studio if he was there? A little bit of guile, Sean.
A little bit of guile, yeah, exactly.
A little bit of guile.
Can we just touch on Switzerland for a minute? And it was something I talked about last week on the podcast, Mark, and their seemingly mental frailties that they clearly have after conceding. We talked about, I watched their game against Denmark where they conceded 3 goals in the last 7 minutes,
yes,
and gave up a 3-0 lead. And you could see the second they scored and Ireland got their tails up a bit, like, right, we have to go for this. They just died. They were nowhere near the team they were because they'd actually played really well up to that point, especially in the second half. But once the pressure came on, then they just crumbled again. So that's definitely something in their team. And I was in the press conference after the game and there was a few Swiss journalists there and they were speaking to the Switzerland manager and they were not happy. The manager wasn't happy. They weren't happy. And they were just like asking, oh, what's the story here? This is like, you know, this has happened. It happened against Denmark in March. It happened against Portugal in the Nations League in June where they conceded 2 goals in the last 2 minutes and ended up losing 3-1. And now it's after happening against Ireland. So this is obviously a developing team for them, and like Switzerland are the best team in the group, they're going to qualify. But it's something we mentioned before the game, and it did end up actually happening. So,
and that's something that Ireland has in spades as well. Like, we may not have the same players as Switzerland, nor like we definitely don't have the same players as Switzerland. We don't have the players that play at a high level, consistent Champions League players like Switzerland have. But what we do have is a mentality of we can get a goal at any moment, at any given time. Which
do we have that mentality, or is our mentality that we can get a goal at any moment, at any given time, after we've gone 1-0 down?
But to be honest, I'll take that over over we'll go 1-0 up and we know for a fact that we're conceding.
Yeah,
like,
true.
I think we have a bit of that in us as well.
Yeah.
So we never go 1-0 up, so we can't figure it out. We just always go 1 down.
There's definitely some smart Switzerland lads who are immediately on. What point was the Switzerland goal? Was it 75 minutes?
Yeah.
There's some lads on Switzerland Twitter, no doubt, or straight away going, do you know, I think we've scored too early.
That's the one thing. Well, there's a few things, but that's one thing that really frustrates me about this Ireland team is that you can see how well they do play when they play with a bit of abandonment and a bit of just like, right, we're going for this. And you just wonder, not even can they do it for a full 90 minutes, but why can't they do it in periods of the game, even for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you know, at stages throughout where they can just let the shackles off a little bit and go for this. I know you can work against you too, especially against good teams, but it is annoying to see that we can do that and we don't do it more often. We only seem to play well when our backs are against the wall.
Let's hear from Kevin Doyle, get his take on the game on Thursday night. We spoke to him on Friday morning. We'll hear about that and also just in general how he's getting on with his post-football career, what he's up to and some of his predictions for the season ahead.
Kevin, you were at the match in the Aviva last night. I suppose we got out of jail in the end, but pretty exciting.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, start to finish. It was, you know, you go to see a lot of Ireland games, probably haven't been the most exciting in recent years. I thought that was a great game last night. I was wondering whether we'd, you know, put everyone behind the ball and go for a draw because it wouldn't have been it turned out it was a good result, but we didn't. We went for it. I was watching Mick on the sideline, you know, urging people forward. Really taking a chance, I suppose, but it made for an exciting game. We had chances, we could have won it, we finished a stronger team. Switzerland would feel they missed a few chances, could have won it. But I thought it was just, you know, we played well, I enjoyed it. Really good goal, equaliser, and good result all around. I think a positive atmosphere on the night as well. It was an enjoyable game.
Yeah. You've played under, I think, the last 3 managers before Mick, or all the managers in between Mick, I suppose.
What did do you think that there's a kind of a noticeable, discernible difference in the style of play that keeping the ball more?
I think I don't know. I played under Mick for a long time as well, and he encourages players to play. You know, he doesn't go out and say boot the ball. He doesn't go out and, you know, pass here, there, and everywhere. He sort of gives you a little bit of license, puts you in a good shape. He's well organized. Everybody wants to play for him, which is key with him. We don't have superstars. You need players all buying into it and going out there and trying. You watch them. You know, they're all. I know we all say Ireland work hard and everything, but they're working hard to you know, in an organised way, and when they get the ball, they seem to be in a great shape to play some good football. You know, there's nothing magic about it. It's just, you know, a bit of work on the training pitch, and we've got very good players who can play, and like I said, there's no superstars, but a lot of good players, and you see that last night. Our back four was, you know, really strong, solid back four. You'd have a lot of confidence in them, and up the pitch, we have people who can create, and great to see McGoldrick get his first goal. He played really well. He was just missing the goal, and, you know, get his first international goal. You see, it meant a lot to him.
Yeah, you've ploughed the line in that way many's a time. He's really kind of come into his own in the last kind of two seasons, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has, and I think club as well. And Mick has given, you know, shown great, I suppose, faith in him to play him and you know, give confidence. You can see that in how he played last night. A manager was. Who just stuck him in there and played him for, didn't play for 90 minutes, played for most of the game until he was, you know, his legs were gone, and you know, he did a great job. And all the players played well. I don't think you can pick out anyone who didn't play well. I think everyone contributed. As I said, we got a little lucky, but that was due to our style of play. We went for it, you know, which was good to see. We didn't just sit back and, you know, soak it up for 90 minutes. We were at home and we had a go, and the crowd enjoyed it, I think. Been at the game, I don't know what it was like looking on TV, but been at the game, it was a great atmosphere, people enjoyed it, and on the pitch it was a good, the game went, 90 minutes went like that, which is a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. Asking you about the game, you've obviously been doing a good bit of punditry since you're kind of 2 years out of football now, is it?
Yeah, it's coming up in the next month, 2 years.
Yeah, so you've been doing some punditry, you've been doing some coaching, you've been doing stuff outside of football as well. What is kind of, I suppose that's a good way to be, to kind of see where you
I am. You know, I've not, I suppose, nailed myself to anything. I do a little bit punditry with RTE. We breed horses at home. I'm involved in that day to day. You know, I've been involved with coaching Gaelic football. I've been involved with the Wexford under 20s, been involved with the Ireland under 17s for the year. So I've dipped in and out, and, you know, I just want to see, I suppose, I enjoy doing a bit of everything. I don't like being totally focused on one thing, and also seeing, you know, I've been a footballer for so long, seeing what I like outside of it. I don't want to rush into anything and commit 100% to something and then realise in a year's time that's not what I want to do. I've made a conscious decision to take my time, and, you know, I love the horses at home. That's sort of what I concentrate a little bit more on. It's their day to day, but, you know, that I enjoy being involved with football still, and you know, not done so much with it, and to go to the game last night and watch the game, it's the first time I've actually enjoyed watching a game, I think, since I not played. I wanted to be out there in the last year or two. I wanted to be out on the pitch, and it wasn't really enjoyable sitting, whereas last night I just got to sit there, have a beer, enjoy the game, and it was nice. So it's been that's what everyone says about retiring, and it's tough, but luckily, because I've had those different, I haven't found it maybe as challenging yet. Maybe it will come, as some people maybe say you will.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about breeding horses then, because that's very different than being a professional footballer.
Yeah, it isn't like it's something like my dad has done, you know, most of his life. So you know, it's there, and it's something I would have grown up with a bit. So and I've had, while I was playing, I had mares, but I wasn't there day to day to look after them. But since I've come home, I've invested a bit more and taken more of a keen interest. It's something, you know, you look at a horse sort of like you look at a footballer in their size and their scope and their shape and how they move, and it doesn't mean they're going to be good. You know, I always compare it to Messi, that you'd never buy Messi in a sales ring if you didn't know. You know, you buy Ronaldo all day long because he looks the business. You'd never buy Messi, you know, he'd be put down, unfortunately. I don't think we can put that on camera, can we? But he would be, but he turns out to be the best. The horse is a bit like that, and you try to breed the best looker, the best everything, and it's enjoyable, and you pick the stallions who you're going to, and, you know, there's a lot of work goes into it and a lot of time and effort, but it's not a full-time job for me, but it's a full-time hobby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Class. So you're, as you said there, since you come home, it's funny, there's been a, you know, a lot of footballers go to England maybe earlier than you did, maybe come home a little bit later, put down a lot more roots, and do kind of find it difficult to sort of move back to Ireland. Do you find that that's something that...
No, we always planned. I'm married a girl from Wexford. My wife is from, you know, just down the road. So I suppose it's easier in that sense. If I'd have, you know, a different case, I suppose, you married an American girl, went out there, or an Irish girl, you'd end up there probably. But, you know, we always plan to move home at some stage. We do miss, we missed our lives in America. We had a fantastic time in England, wherever we lived, and Wexford is no different. You know, it's after living in, you know, I suppose, big cities, it takes a little bit to get used to being back in Wexford, but it's been no problem. We've really enjoyed it, and kids love it, and so far, so good.
Yeah, well, you get a chance to kind of enjoy a little bit of other sports as well. You mentioned, like, being involved in Gaelic football.
Yeah.
Watching other games.
Yeah, I was at the All-Ireland semi-final with my son there. He's massive, big into hurling now in Wexford. He's 6 years old, and he's cracked into hurling. And I was at the All-Ireland semi-final, bawling his eyes out at the end. No, it's just nice to be able to go to these things as well. You know, your whole life, you don't go to things. You don't go to weddings. You don't go... When you're a sports person, you're so concentrated on your job, your football, like everything else goes out the window, and you're very selfish, and you miss a lot of things, and it's nice. It takes a while to retune back into, you know, sort of, you can do stuff, you know, you can go to all these events and all these occasions and sporting matches that you wouldn't have got to go to in the past. So say it again, all helps get used to life outside of football.
We're here today as an official ambassador for Ladbrokes, and you're going to be part of our build-up podcast where we look ahead to like the different games in the season over throughout the year. But if you were to look now at kind of the club season overall, if you were to maybe pick a Premier League champion at this stage, who would you be looking at?
It's boring and not very, you know, outside the box. But I suppose it has to be Man City. You know, their manager is the top two managers in the league, Man City and Liverpool. I really like both of them. But I just think Man City have a stronger in-depth squad. I think I'm not a Liverpool fan, but I'd love to see them win the league. I'm a Man United fan, and I'll get probably abused for saying that, that I'd like to see Liverpool. But I really like Jurgen Klopp. He's been a breath of fresh air. He's, you know, after a few years, managers come in and they're quite enthusiastic, and then they go a bit nuts. But he hasn't. He's said, you know, you see his interviews, you see everything. He's honest and he's positive. He'd love to play for him. I'd imagine the players love playing for him. Looking in from the outside, you would love to play in a team the way he plays. But I just don't think they have the strength and depth that Man City are able to provide. It's tough to challenge them.
If I give you City and Liverpool, then who do you see the other two making up the top four?
You know, it's open. I think Arsenal will get in this year. And other than that, I'm not sure. You know, I'm a United fan and I don't see them getting there. Chelsea, it's up in the air still how it's going to settle down for Frank Lampard. It's early days for him, and I hope it goes well for him. I really like him. I really liked him as a person and a player. So I'm not sure about that fourth spot. You were asking me earlier about surprise package. I'd like to think Wolves could be a bit of a... Maybe it's not a surprise package. People are fancying them, but they've got some great players. Their manager seems to be very good. It's a very good club. And I think they could just not get in the top four, but, you know, they finished well last year and they finished up the table, but just do a little bit better than last year, maybe sneak into fifth or sixth. You never know. It'd be nice to see them be able to do it. It won't be easy, but with Man United and Chelsea sort of in transition still and struggling, they might be able to nip in there.
Great to hear from Kevin there. He is right in terms of that these games, even though we're talking about them being 1-1, you know, with 1-1 draw, you could predict it as we did on the Build-Up podcast. Pretty hope you know if you're not listening to that, get on right now. You can search it, the Build Up on Balls.de and all good podcast apps. Myself and Sean are just, we're the prediction kings, really. We're getting everything right.
I mean, to be honest, you'd be hard pressed to find a prediction that we haven't gotten right so far.
What was the odds again on that? 5-1 for 1-1 draw. That's outrageous.
Yeah, for Ireland, if we draw every game 1-1, like.
Yeah, but as I said, Kevin was talking about it, it's much more enjoyable. Those 1-1, like, it's about as enjoyable as an Ireland game can get at present, I think. Like, we're not going to be able to get the ball down and dominate teams possession-wise, but there's a bit more about us than there has been in recent years.
Yeah, and there was a good atmosphere at the game, actually, right from the off. To be fair to the fans, they brought it from the start. Even when things were going a bit against Ireland in the game, the atmosphere still was great. There was a lot of singing, a lot of noise. Be interesting to see how that is tomorrow night. That's Tuesday night in the game against Bulgaria. It's a friendly game, so you'd expect a smaller crowd, but hopefully the atmosphere will still be good. And I think Irish fans will be looking forward to seeing maybe a few players that haven't really featured in this campaign so far. So you'd expect maybe the likes of John Egan to play. He's playing really well for Sheffield United. He's going to get an opportunity to impress the back. Maybe Alan Brown might play. He's a player we haven't really seen play for Ireland much. James Collins will probably make his debut. He's scoring a lot of goals for Luton. Alan Judge will probably get a start. Callum O'Dowd, players like that. Maybe Mark Travers might make his debut as well. So there's a few players like that. But I think we would be amiss not to mention what happened in the group last night as well, which was a huge boost for Ireland, and that Denmark went to Georgia and only managed to get a point.
Yep. It's, but my worry on that is that we could also go to Georgia and only manage to get a point.
We could very easily, but let's live in optimism for a minute, Mark, because what this does to the group is actually huge. I was looking at last night, there's a post up on site about it where I talk about it in more detail, but essentially what it means is Ireland can now, there's now a very realistic scenario where Ireland only get 4 points from their last three games and go and qualify. It basically involves we have to beat Georgia, that's a given, but the key one then is Switzerland play Denmark in, it's in Denmark. But Switzerland, you think, are the better team there. They should have beaten Denmark there in the first game. If Denmark failed to beat Switzerland, that means even if we lose to Switzerland away, which looked like a possibility, we only need a point at home against Denmark in the last game.
The other thing is, I think Switzerland away is the one we should be targeting. Whatever, I'd almost be hoping to get a result against Switzerland and not putting as much emphasis on that Denmark game. Yeah. Because Denmark are obviously a very good team. And when their backs were against the wall, like they were in the playoff when they came to Dublin, they were able to get that result. But Switzerland, as we've talked about earlier on, are the complete opposite, where when that pressure comes on them, we should be targeting them now, going that mental fragility that you spoke of.
100%. I think that's true. But what it also does is it makes that game a little bit of a free hit for Ireland, in that we don't have to, before that, if Denmark had won last night, it meant we would have to go to Switzerland and get at least a point. Whereas now we don't really have to. And that could suit us too, in that we go there with the freedom of knowing we don't necessarily have to get a result. And we've seen with Ireland sometimes that when the pressure is off against bigger teams and nobody's expecting them to do anything, that it can work in their favour. So I think that we can't, like, and again, Ireland, it all comes down to what Ireland do. And people were saying after the result, oh, it doesn't matter, Ireland are going to win anyway. That might be true, but at least it puts us in a position where now that there's a little bit of pressure taken off us and we don't need to necessarily get a great result in every single game.
Yeah, I think that day where we play Georgia and Switzerland play Denmark, that's going to be pivotal.
Yeah,
because we're playing early in the day as well, before that match. So we could already know going into that, right, this is exactly what we need out of this game. Like, if Switzerland beat Denmark, you know, I'm not saying we're laughing, but I'm a lot more optimistic about everything.
Here's a question. Would you rather that we just automatically qualify for every major tournament?
Yes.
Or the way it is now? Because, like, you'd have a big, long gap. You know, you'd have 2 years of nothing, really. And like, you'd have to still have international breaks, and it'd be the Nations League, and it'd be friendlies or whatever. Or the crack that there is now for these couple of months, where there's these massive games. And like, it's that thing of that, if you look at the Euros, we could go to the Euros, maybe we qualify and lose every game, but we'd have had the joy of the journey to get there and this drama.
Yeah. I'd prefer having just one team that was like way out of our league, better than us, like no chance of beating them, and just let us be the second best team, like easily, you know. We never get that. It's always like, oh, we've had to battle our way to get to a playoff. Yeah. And we have to play a team that's much better than us. Why can't we just have, oh yeah, you're playing against Spain, but then you've got the whipping boys underneath you. So it's handy 3-0s for all the boys. And because that's at least have a bit of adversity along the way. Yeah. You've had to play Spain or someone.
Even if we have that, we have, like, say, Germany the last time, like, or twice actually in a row. Like, you have them, but then we always have teams that are, like, two other teams along with us that could beat us, or we could beat them on any given day. There's never like that fourth team is never like, oh yeah, we're definitely
it's not like when you get a Georgia, it's not like, ah, it's only Georgia. It's always Georgia.
Again.
That might just be because we play them incessantly, but like, it's like a similar team to, like, I don't know, like Kosovo now, who are kind of sort of coming of age internationally. It's like, No, these will be tough.
They'll be decent.
Yeah, exactly.
If you offered them before this campaign, I would have said just go bring us to the tournament, simply for the fact that it's in Ireland and we can't have probably the only major international tournament that's ever going to be in Ireland and not be in it. And I know I've got tickets to a couple of the games. I know you've tickets to one of the games as well, Mark. If Ireland aren't in it, like,
yeah, it's gonna be a
get ready
bit of a
for Spain out. And Hungary, guys.
But anyway, if we don't win it, at least we're going to have this incredible under-21 team coming through, and the future does look bright. We'll chat about them in a while. But next up, let's play our themed football quiz. So this week, the Ball Study Football Show quiz is all about players whose surnames are forenames. So Gary, you are 2-0 in the quiz stakes, albeit Sean, you weren't here last week. So you beat Sean the first week. You then beat Morris last week in the which of these players has more Ireland caps quiz, even though he's finished tied in that. You won on a technicality. You won at sudden death. This week we're not going one question for you, one question for the other person. This is first in with the right answer gets the point.
Jesus.
All right.
Oh, no.
And if you get it wrong
you lose a point. So right. I know that everybody know. No, actually, for the aid of people listening at home, you have to shout your name.
Okay.
But only shout your name when you have the right answer in your head, because if you take too long or you give the wrong answer, you lose a point. So the answers to all these questions are players whose surname doubles as a possible forename for someone else.
I think Sean's obscure football knowledge is really going to come to the fore here, and I could be found out as a bit of a
right.
pod.
Come to the forename.
Hey. Are we ready?
So shout our names.
Are you ready?
So shout your first name.
And then the answer.
And your surname doesn't have to be a first name.
No.
Grant. Just making sure.
So question number one. On February the 2nd, 2011, this player scored directly from a corner in a 3-1 defeat to West Ham.
Sean.
Sean?
Charlie Adam.
Yes, 1-0,
yes.
Sean.
Get in, Charlie.
I had no idea. I forgot about Charlie Adam.
Question number two. This player scored the first ever goal in the Premier League.
Sean. Brian Dean.
Yes, 2-0, Sean. He's on a roll.
My Irish handed to me here.
Question number three. This player has scored the most goals for a defender in Premier League history.
Sean. John Terry.
John Terry, 3-0, Sean.
I'm so sorry, Gary.
That there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 questions in this.
Jesus,
so still all to play for, but it is 3-0, Sean. Or a question number four. This player was signed by Roy Keane for Sunderland before leaving to join Southampton and play alongside Kenman Jones up front in the Championship. He scored a goal, I think 2 goals in the last day of the season to help them avoid relegation to League One.
Kenman Jones? What's Sunderland?
Do you want a clue?
Yeah.
I'll give you the clue. He was playing up front with Kenman Jones for both club and country.
Gary? Dwight York.
Wrong answer. -1 point for Gary.
You're minus. Is this a free go now for me? Or can I get like?
No.
I know who it is now as well.
Well, you can come back in if you want.
Gary. Can I get it?
Yeah.
Stern John.
Yes. Gary's back up to 0 points.
Oh, hang on. I was very tentative there for no reason.
Why would you get a free hit? I told you it was the wrong answer. It's -1.
Sure. I thought he's already got bad enough anyway.
So Gary's back up to
back to 0.
It was 3-0 after
York
3 questions.
His first name as well. I know he wasn't the person who scored the goals. But
question number 5. Former Everton and Rangers player who has mysteriously disappeared from RTE's soccer coverage in recent years. He also mysteriously was on RTE's soccer coverage for years.
Everton, Rangers.
Come on now, lads.
Rangers and...
Played for Everton mostly, and Rangers. Had a couple of other clubs, but by and large it was Everton and Rangers. He's not Irish. He's from the UK. But he has, for some reason, was a co-commentator and sometimes pundit on RTE's Champions League coverage and Premier League coverage back in the day. But
Sean.
Sean?
Trevor Stephen.
Trevor Stephen, 4-0 Sean.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, I forgot about him.
No recollection of that whatsoever.
I always confuse him with former Sligo assistant manager Gary Stevens.
So this is 4-0 with only 3 questions to go. So Gary, you're going to have to hope that Sean gets a couple of wrong answers in this. And ends
he's going to play it safe now and not answer anything.
You could do that if you want. Yeah. Question number 6. This defender has played in 2 Champions League finals and was runner-up in the 2018 European Golden Boy Award. Golden Boy Award is for the best young player in Europe.
Gary.
Gary.
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Yes. The man with 3 first names. So technically that's two people. Trent Alexander-Arnold could be Alexander-Arnold Trent, could be Arnold Alexander Trent. You could have them any way you want. They're all four names. So we've only got two questions to go, and it, you're still in the game kind of, Gary. It's 4-1 to Sean. You just need Sean to come in with a wrong answer here. Question number 7. This player's transfer to Leeds United. Oh, I have actually two Leeds questions here by accident. Sorry, this is not, I'm not showing my bias. But anyway, this player's transfer to Leeds United fell through at the last minute in last January's transfer window.
Sean. Gary.
Sean was in first.
Daniel James.
Daniel James. So now
I'm officially bet.
No, you're not. It's 5-1 to Sean.
He needs to get... Three wrong answers.
I need to keep just coming in with wrong answers. I might just do it for the crack.
Last question. This player scored 157 goals for Leeds United before joining Juventus, where he managed 108 goals and won 3 Serie A titles. He also was top goal scorer in the English first division when he was with Leeds, and finished top scorer in Serie A as well. Sean, you're looking bemused.
Go on, Sean. Have a few guesses there.
Yeah. Guesses there, Sean.
I have a name in my head, but it's definitely not him.
Leeds, Juventus.
I'll give you a clue. He went back to Leeds then after that again. Only scored 3 goals in his second stint at Leeds.
And then he went back to Leeds.
Very famous footballer.
Yeah. I can't guess. I'm waiting for Sean to guess wrong.
Well, you think you know who it is, but you can't listen.
No, I actually don't know who it is. I don't think.
Jesus Christ, I have no idea. I presume eras must be like 70s or so.
It was actually the 50s it started.
Oh, 50s.
You're going to have Sean, to do Sean, go on.
John Charles.
Sean, what a performance.
Get in.
I've been found out.
See, when there's no tiebreakers, you're useless.
I'm not quick off the mark. I need a question to question... format.
Yeah, the pressure got to you there.
No, you bottled it.
And once I got that first one in, I felt like...
Damn you, Stern John.
Well, Sean, you've shown great knowledge of 1950s soccer there. Up next, we'll see, is your knowledge of present-day under-21 football any better?
Oh, I wouldn't imagine so.
So John Charles was not on show in Talla on Friday night, Sean, but there were a couple of decent strikers still that Ireland will be pinning their hopes on for the future. We had a good 1-0 win against Armenia.
Yeah, like, the optics of winning 1-0 at home to Armenia, it doesn't look particularly outstanding or great. I mean, like, winning the odd goal against a team that you should be beating anyway, like, you kind of look at it in one way, but we absolutely dominated the match from start to finish. Like, they didn't really have any opportunities. I mean, they had one pot shot, which Kevin Kelleher saved easily, but it was all about the attacking players that we had. And I'm very excited.
Which of those attacking players caught your eye the most?
Now, to be honest, my man of the match was Jason Malumbi in the centre of the park. He's brilliant. And to bring it back to squad numbers, he was wearing number 8. He played like a number 8. He was doing everything, every facet of the game. He was tackling. He was getting beyond the play.
Box to box.
Oh, he's handsome as well. Like, it's just everything. Like,
if he had a metallic jersey on, he'd be your perfect player.
Oh, stop. And to be honest, there is a little shine off them New Balance joints. Yeah. So.
And you think he's got a Y in his name is in terms of Jason, purposely. Because a normal run-of-the-mill Jason could be a number 6. But he's not quite a number 10. It's not like, you know, some sort of fancy European name. It's just Jason with a Y because he's at number 8. With that little bit extra, a little bit of something about
pizzazz.
Him.
Yeah, he has got that little bit, because it wasn't like he was like, oh, he can pass, he can tackle. Like, he got on the ball a few times and he did like one or two Armenians, like he left them on the deck, and I was like, this lad's got everything. And then not only that, but like, he's got the captain's armband on, barking out instructions. This is exactly what I want from a centre mid. Like, and I said it on site about him being exactly what the Irish midfield needs in terms of every facet of his game is just as good as the other. Like, and he was talking after the match about how he wants like to get more goals. He was getting beyond the play so he can get in the box. Like, so, to be honest, we've got enough like strikers and attacking options whereby we didn't need him up there, but I'm very glad that he was up there as well. He was like from my own end, but not to take away from any of the four attackers in front of him. So it's always nice to see like players as well recognize that there's certain things that he wants to do better, consistently trying to get better, and then trying to aid like the likes of the attackers around him. But it was between him and his Brighton teammate. I know Jason's on loan at Millwall, but Aaron Connolly for a man of the match for me. Aaron Connolly was sensational
Brighton
as well.
Brighton seemed to have a very good youth structure in place. Like Ben White, who's no one who isn't a Leeds fan will have ever heard of probably, is on loan at Leeds at the minute from Brighton. And he's one of the best defenders in the Championship already. Like, he's brilliant on the ball. You're looking at Brighton already having, you know, three good centre backs in the first team in the Premier League already. Like, if you look at Malumbi, you look at Connolly, you look at the likes of White, they seem to have something in place that they've definitely got their head screwed on in terms of developing players.
Even at that, like, you've got Danny Mandry, who came off the bench for Ireland, and he was released by Brighton, like, last year. Comes to the League of Ireland, is absolutely going to be in the team of the year. Definitely one of the best midfielders in the league. Like, and that's like, he's not good enough for them. Even yeah. Like, I know he's only like 20 years of age, but if he's not good enough for your youth setup, then you must be doing something right. Because yeah. he's a brilliant footballer, great technical footballer. Like, it's even evidence. Like, if you're going to take Troy Parra off, who are you going to bring on? Mandrew, who is like absolutely like, he's class.
What did you make of the lads up front? Because we're kind of, Stephen Kenny did his best to kind of shoehorn them all into the team. Like, Connolly was playing out on the left, Ida was playing up front, Parrott was playing in the hole, then you had Kilkenny on the right, but you got the feeling that maybe that might have been Obafemi where he fit. How did that work? Did they kind of, could you tell that they were kind of being played out of position, or did they link up well?
You could tell Parrott wasn't really playing the position that he's best suited to. Like, he said it as well, that he is a striker, but he wants to be able to play in as many positions as possible, because that just means that they're going to need, if they want me in the team, they can fit me in anywhere. I think, to be honest, Connolly suits playing off the left. He has the pace for it, and he knows exactly what to do. He can go off his left, he can go off his right. I mean, it serves him well if he's playing through the centre as well, but you're not going to, like, Ida is a number nine. Like, he plays up front. I wouldn't waste him playing him on the wings, because especially with Stephen Kenny, he's not going to play a wide target man. That just won't suit how he plays football.
Rafa Benitez, Peter Crouch-esque.
Yeah, just throwing him on, just throwing him on the side of the pitch and just wait for him to cut in off the side, get a header on. Like, he wouldn't do that. Like, Ida's a striker. He'll play as a striker. But I think Connolly really works well on the left. And if he wants that position, it's absolutely his. And I think even if we're looking towards the future, which it's hard not to, because we dominated that match and I'm very excited. But, like, we need a left winger. I mean, maybe, you know, James McLean, you know, that kind of jury is still, we don't know how we feel about James McLean. I don't know how I feel about James McLean still the best of times. But Connolly's absolutely, like, he's terrific to watch. They were triple teaming him at some points.
Yeah.
And he was just going through them like they weren't there.
I suppose the game against Sweden is going to be a bigger test for them, because, like, they've played Armenia and Luxembourg in the group so far. I know, obviously, they had the under-21 tournament, which was the Toulon tournament during the summer, which was really impressive. But it'd be interesting to see how they get on in Sweden. I wonder, with Stephen Kenny, obviously his stamp, his fingerprints are all over that team already. And I have a feeling that this time next year, obviously, he's going to be the Ireland boss. How many of those players are going to be playing regularly for the senior team in a year's time? I have a feeling it's going to be a lot. I think he's going to bring those guys with him, guys he knows, he's trusted them, they know how he wants to play, and I think that'll help him moving up to the senior squad as well, to bring young players with him who know what he wants to do and how to implement that.
Yeah, it is weird that there's this, like, very strange arranged marriage type thing that we're all kind of critical, I think, at this point, because we're all like, Jesus, you know, Mick McCarthy, that if they lose to Switzerland at the weekend, or it could have been basically it for him. It's like, there's his, you know, yeah, what's the point of staying on almost? But if this does work out and Kenny does get his way of playing, you know, trained into the players as well, and gets to know them a bit better, gets to bring them up through, it might actually not be a bad idea.
Yeah, I think, now, I reckon Stephen will also do the Mick McCarthy thing of, if they're playing, then I have no choice but to play them. In a year's time, I presume they're going to have a lot more first team, like, club appearances under their belt as well. Like, Parrott will definitely make his Spurs debut in the near future. I think that was evidenced by Pochettino saying he's my second choice striker. Like,
yeah.
I think Connolly will definitely, like, especially under Graham Potter, will get more opportunities in the Brighton first team. So if that's happening, then I think they might be brought in before Kenny even gets the job. Like, they might get, like, I'm not saying if we do qualify for the Euros, presume they, chances are it'll be too early for them to be in the squad. But if they're around the squad beforehand, it won't do them any harm, and it certainly won't do the Irish national team going forward any harm.
Yeah,
I reckon it's all dependent on what they do on club level. They're not going to be in there as a token gesture of, oh, well, Stephen Kenny was under 21's manager, let's bring in players that he knows. Like, if that's the case, then I just don't want to see Brian Gartland play centre half for Ireland just because he knows him. Like,
I think, you know, what Mark said is interesting, that there's obviously this really weird dynamic about, we know Stephen Kenny's going to be there in a year, and it's kind of people saying it's unfair on Mick. I'd nearly, in a way, go the other way, in that I think it's actually saved Mick McCarthy from a lot of criticism, because Mick McCarthy's come in to do a job to get us to the Euros, and we're playing a style of football that, while it's a bit better than what we had at the end of the previous regime, it's still nothing too exciting. But it's, people are now saying, oh, well, Mick's here to get us a job, and he's just here to do a job, he's only here for a year, and we'll see next year. Stephen Kenny's going to be more of a long-term thing for Ireland. So I actually think, in a weird way, it's saved Mick McCarthy from criticism, because if he was in the job indefinitely and playing the style of football he is now and not blooding the young players and get putting these exciting players into the squad, I think he'd be getting a lot more criticism.
It's like Avengers Endgame Part 1 and 2. First one, you know, Infinity War. Was it Infinity War was the first one?
I don't watch the Marvel
movies. Can't. You were just like, well, look, there's another one to come, yeah, we'll see how it plays out. Turns out Endgame is very good, so hopefully Stephen Kenny is our Avengers Endgame. This has been somewhat of an Ireland special, as is our want, given the fact that we're in an international window. Last week, Maurice Brosnan of this parish caught up with Gary Neville. We had a one-on-one chat with him, and within the chat, we actually talked about his role with Salford City, the Irish players at Salford City, and some of the issues he's had with trying to sign players from the League of Ireland. Let's listen to that right now.
You obviously watched a lot of Salford this year. They've got Richie Towell, who Irish fans will be very familiar with, and also Adam Rooney. How have you found working with them, I suppose?
It's been excellent. I mean, Adam Rooney's obviously been with us for 12 months. He's a brilliant professional, scored a lot of goals for us last season, captained the team at times as well, been a really good influence around the dressing room. Richie Towell's obviously new to the club, scored a goal on Saturday's first league goal for us, obviously a big talent. Hopefully this season can be a big influence for us. It was somebody that we felt lucky to be able to bring to Salford. His application in the first few months has been fantastic. I think he's enjoying it at the club and enjoying it living in and around Manchester. And you know, we're delighted with him. And Rory Gaffney as well has just left to go on loan to Walsall. Had a good year with us last year. You know, hopefully he can come back and play with us and sort of, you know, get himself a lot of games at Walsall and do well, and we can get a confident player back. We've just got 5-6 strikers at the moment. It just happens. So I think we've been really, you know, the Irish lads who've played for us have been fantastic. And it's a market, actually, that we've looked at other players in, but bloody expensive, these Irish players. Yeah, you think you're going to come over to Little Island and sort of pick up a few players on the cheap? It doesn't quite happen like that. It's like, you know, Shamrock Rovers, they want £250,000 for him and 300. Jeez. No, I'll stick in the northwest with the non-league clubs. So you've got some really good players over here, and I think good characters and personalities. And
in the Irish league, sorry.
We'll continue to look in the Irish league. It's of interest to us. I think that, you know, you've got good players over here, and I think that's one of the things that's happened in the last 20 years since the Premier League's sort of started. That there has been a sort of lack of faith put in the sort of what would be Welsh, Northern Irish, Republic of Ireland, English players. You know, the less representation in the top clubs, less representation in the Premier League than there were going back 20 years. But I think the players and the talent are still there. It's about creating a pathway for them, and I think we still believe in it at Salford. That's one of the reasons we set up the club.
It strikes me that a guy like Richie, for example, is a lot more of a technical player. It seems to be he always really thrived playing European games with Dundalk, but maybe not necessarily playing on a Friday night in Cork, for example, that the technical aspect.
I wouldn't enjoy Friday night in Cork playing. I mean, no, he's a technical player, but he's also someone who's got a bit of tenacity about him. He's got good energy, he runs forward well. But yeah, I think, yeah, he's more technical. He is more technical. He scored a great goal for us on Saturday. And he can play, he can accept the ball, but he can also run forward and sort of sees a third man run forward into the edge of the box. I think he can score a lot of goals for us this year. It's about us obviously making sure we can get him into positions often enough with quality to be able to get him to you know, take those chances.
So that was Gary Neville, of course, chatting to our very own Maurice Brosnan at the launch of Cadbury's partnership with the Premier League for the season ahead. Interesting chat there from Gary about trying to sign players from Ireland and not expecting them to be as expensive as they are. Now, there's two things here. There's one, the point he was making about the price of the players. And two, it just makes you wonder, what players was he after? Like when he's talking about lads looking at play at the likes of Shamrock Rovers or whoever.
I was helped setting that up. And as I was watching it, I was like, I wonder who he was talking about. And I presume it was the likes of Trevor Clark, who's moved on to Rotherham now. Players who are like too good for the League of Ireland already, and they're young enough so that they can go off. I was like, good. Yeah, they should be too expensive for Salford City, who are playing in League Two. Like these teams, like Rovers, have to look beyond just like, oh, we'll get a few bob out of this lad. Like, I think Clark was always going to go back to England. He was always itching to go back, and he was always good enough to go back. And there has to be, like, they eventually settled on a number that was right for them and for Rotherham, and that came together. But I don't feel bad for Gary Neville in any way, shape, or form that League of Ireland clubs are saying, no, these players are worth X amount and you have to pay X amount to get them. Because English clubs have had it far too easy for too long. Like Everton fans, like seeing Seamus Coleman, 80 grand. Seamus Coleman in no way, shape or form, when he left Sligo Rovers, he was still a raw teenager.
Yeah.
But he was worth much more than 80 grand now. And then at his pump was obviously worth God knows how much.
What Gary Neville might not appreciate as well is that the League of Ireland is always inherently linked, no whether League of Ireland fans like it or not, to what's going on in England. So when you see the prices being paid for lower league players in League One, League Two, League of Ireland clubs are going to look at that and say, hold on, we're getting taken for a ride here. We're not going to be giving up our best players who are as good, if not better, than what's going in lower levels over there for pittance. So that sort of stuff is going to correct itself.
Yeah, like you've got players that have played non-league football. Like Jamie Vardy went for £1 million and he had never played league football.
Turned out he was okay.
Which, like, you know, unfair play because Leicester saw how good he could be. But, like, I'm trying to think back to what League of Ireland players have cost. Even, like, say, Keith Fahey cost $500,000.
Roy O'Donovan, was he the highest?
Roy O'Donovan, yeah.
Was he $1 million?
He wasn't $1 million. No, okay. No League of Ireland player's gone for $1 million. Like, you've got, I know Keith Fahey was an international and was a consistent international for years. Roy O'Donovan didn't really do it at Sunderland. Been a very good player in Australia.
Yeah.
But, like, you've got to go, these lads have done it. Like, and even at that, you've got League of Ireland players that are doing it in Europe.
Yeah.
You know, which I don't think lower league English clubs appreciate enough.
That exposure.
Yeah,
that
like
I think Jack Byrne is going to be the test case here, isn't he? If he does decide to move back, which we assume he will, even if he might not necessarily be the best idea to move to lower divisions in England. Maybe we were talking before in the office, maybe he'd be better off moving to a more technical league, going back to Holland or going to Spain. But I think he will be the test case to see how much League of Ireland clubs can get in this market for their players.
Yeah, and that,
he's so important to Shamrock Rovers as well.
And that'll be aided by, even if he gets 10 minutes against Bulgaria and makes his debut, you got to throw an extra couple of £100,000 on top of
which
that.
Which he probably will.
I mean, it should do anyway, because then you've got a full international. Like, you've got to pay for that.
Yeah.
Like, it's a premium. Mm. So, but I knew he kind of didn't mean it in a condescending way.
That's
but at the same
say.
Time,
to be fair to him, there's two ways of looking at it. It's one that, you know, you could defend what they cost, but also I don't think he didn't mean, like, some people took it as a bit of an insult to the League of Ireland. I don't think it was. I think he meant in regards to, like, historically speaking, in regards to the fact that he was just admitting that he was wrong, that he kind of had gone into this thinking that, and that he discovered that this is going to be a lot harder.
I kind of took it that, if anything, he pushed back on that idea, really. People are saying little old Ireland, but it's not like that.
But exactly. I'd imagine, like, if he signed, like, Salford signed Richie Tell this off season, they wouldn't have got anywhere near Richie Tell if he was coming from Dundalk, and he eventually signed for Brighton and then didn't get a tap. But Richie Tell wouldn't have been looking at Salford City when he was leaving the League of Ireland. He would have been like Championship or higher. He even said that himself at the time. He's like, I'm not looking at League One, not looking at League Two. And I don't know whether it just might be a sort of mentality change to him. He's like, well, it's actually pretty good down in these leagues. Like,
when you're getting the money Salford are paying.
Exactly. Like, you look at Rory Gaffney, you're like, Rory Gaffney wasn't a brilliant League of Ireland player. He was good. and he was young, so, and he scored goals. That's why he went over to England. But he wasn't like unbelievable. And now he's at Salford City as well. So there's also a case of like the best League of Ireland players are definitely too good for League Two. Definitely too good for League Two, which is just that as well. Like,
yeah, exactly. But that was a really interesting chat with Gary. The chat actually, Morris chatted about plenty more besides just the Irish angle on that. And you can check that out on our website right now if you go to the football section. We also have a clip up of Gary talking about the attitude of people on Twitter towards him compared to how they
greet him in real life.
How they greet him in real life. Exactly. That's up on all our social media channels at the minute. But that's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening. If you have not subscribed yet, please do. You can find us on Balls.ie podcast. Just search Balls.ie podcast on all good podcast apps, or indeed search football on Balls.ie. If you only want to listen to our soccer content on the Balls.ie podcast feed, you will get much more besides that. You'll get GA, you'll get our rugby show, you'll get the build up every Wednesday as well. But like I said, that's it from us today. Thank you for listening, and we will chat to you soon.
You got the job on the technicality of a legend who recommended you. You are nothing, you are a fool, and you are a waste of time. Good night.
I've kept really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that.
I don't believe personal insults help it.
And Jack Charlton is quite right to be indignant about that, and the gentleman in the yellow hat really exists nowhere in the firmament of international football.
The 10-man board of the FAI, the clowns, are now going to put the names in a hat. They're going to pick people who they've read about in newspapers.
Give it a blam and flash it into the net. What a goal that was.
And of course, Celtic.
I agree.
Ronnie just wants to say the word Schweinsteiger.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.